Oh, Frank, yeah. Frankie's ridden the Group 1 winner at the Breeders' Cup, which is his 12th. He's become the most successful jockey here. Obviously, Compass is cheaper in the US than they are in Australia. Time now for the news. After the news, we'll be back with Michael Carayannis at halftime and Jeff Lawson, our legend of the game.
Dozens of bushfires across New South Wales with hot and windy conditions hampering their efforts. More than 1,100 firefighters spent yesterday battling 65 bushfires across the state, with two emergency warnings issued then lifted for fires near Cessnock and Port Stephens. The Rural Fire Service says the state could continue to experience similar hot and windy weather until a cool change on Wednesday. Investigators in Sydney Southwest are trying to determine the cause of a fire which destroyed two buildings and scores of cars at a wrecking yard. More than 100 firefighters were needed to put out the blaze, with one treated for burns and three others for smoke inhalation. Superintendent Paul Johnson told the ABC it was a challenging situation.
As we got these cars stacked on top of each other, it was quite hard to get all our hose lines onto all the fires that would have been protected by either buildings or other cars.
Meanwhile, in WA, an extreme fire danger advice is in place for the Goldfields Midlands today, and a severe fire danger advice is in place for parts of the Midwest Gascoyne. Aussie entertainer Maria Venuti has suffered a stroke. The 75-year-old was at home yesterday morning when she was disturbed by an alleged stalker who had been harassing her for several weeks. Venuti managed to sound the alarm, alerting police before collapsing. Officers arrived to find a 38-year-old man still on the premises, with witnesses reporting he was tasered and apprehended. Ms. Venuti's daughter Bianca has turned to social media to ask for prayers for her mother, who remains in a coma. A 19-year-old man has been stabbed in the face during an argument in the Melbourne CBD. Police say he became involved in an argument with another man outside a fast food restaurant on Swanston Street around 12:30 this morning. The injured man was taken to hospital, and a 29-year-old of no fixed address was arrested and charged with intentionally causing serious injury. A man and a woman have been charged with murder over the stabbing death of a Launceston man. Aaron Matthew Monaco was stabbed in Newnham on Friday night and died in an ambulance on the way to hospital. A 32-year-old Newnham man and a 39-year-old Ravenswood woman have been charged with the 41-year-old's murder and will appear in court today. Overseas, Beyoncé and Jay-Z have performed for Hillary Clinton at a concert at Cleveland State University in an effort to boost turnout for the Democratic candidate in the swing state of Ohio. Beyoncé told the crowd that less than 100 years ago, women did not have the right to vote in the US, and she wanted to see her daughter grow up seeing a woman lead the country. Her husband, Jay-Z, said Donald Trump's talk is divisive and weakens America. A monitoring group says an offensive by Syrian insurgents aimed at the government-held part of the city of Aleppo has killed at least 74 civilians, including 25 children. The insurgents launched the assault 8 days ago, hoping to break a months-long government siege on the rebel-held eastern part of the city. Rights groups and the United Nations have sharply criticised the rebels over the shelling of western Aleppo districts, which has killed many civilians. Also in news, a man has died in a caravan fire at Tunnock in eastern Tasmania. Police say the man's identity has yet to be confirmed, and an investigation is underway into what caused the overnight fire, though there was no evidence at this stage to suggest the death is suspicious. This is Air News. Australia will face a formidable total when it bats last in the Perth Test, as Air Sport's Graham Davis reports.
Despite the heat, Australia fought back in the final session with South Africa 6 for 390 at stumps and leading by 388 runs. A 250-run third wicket partnership was finally broken to the last ball before tea, when Siddlehead Dumini caught behind for 141. Elgar was then dismissed by Hazelwood for 127, his fifth Test century. Mitchell Marsh removed Bavuma for 8, and Stark secured the key wicket of Du Plessis, caught behind for 32, but they were the only 4 wickets to fall on a difficult day for Australia. Graham Davis in Perth for Air Sports.
The Wallabies have put on a crisp attacking display to open their spring tour with a comfortable 32-8 victory in Cardiff and extend their winning streak over Wales to 12 games. First half tries to captain Stephen Moore and centres Tafiti Kurudrani and Reece Hodge underlined Australia's dominant opening 40 minutes before man of the match Bernard Foley capped a 12-point performance with a runaway second half try, and Dane Haylett-Petty chipped in with a late intercept. It was a display of attacking rugby coach Michael Checker insists of his players, and should should embolden their hopes of a Grand Slam tour, but was soured by the loss of flanker David Pocock to concussion at half-time. To English Premier League, and West Ham drew Stoke City 1-1, as did Manchester City and Middlesbrough. Australian Independent Radio News.
This sports update is for Builder Steel Direct. Now team with local lintel manufacturer Galintel to supply Aussie-made galintels, T-bars, render bars, structural steel beams and more.
A wise man once said, you never find it hard to meet expenses. They're everywhere. A bottle of Windy Peak is not expensive, and it's easy to find. Windy Peak Wine by De Bortoli. It's everywhere. Here's the traffic.
The MS Sydney to Geelong bike ride is underway this morning. We're seeing slow traffic on the Princes Highway from St Peters, and there are lane closures and speed restrictions through Ramsgate, St Susie and Tarrant Point towards Engadine. The cyclists are sharing the road with motorists for most of it though, so you will have to be careful. We're looking good in and out of Sydney Airport at the moment. The M5 is up to speed and all lanes are back open on the M4 in Auburn following an earlier breakdown. In Port Stephens, the Pacific Highway is closed northbound at Madowry Road due to the bushfire in 12 Mile Creek, and southbound traffic is being turned back at Swan Bay Road. Coles are cutting the price of meat, like Coles Australian beef rump steaks, down and staying down to just $21.50 a kilo. Only at Coles, I'm Tim Govers on Sky Sports Radio.
Sky Sports Radio, Sydney weather.
Tim, it's your cue. Thought you were doing it, Raymond. Sunny, winds northwesterly 25 to 30 kilometres an hour, turning southwesterly 20 to 30 kilometres an hour in the late morning. It feels like we should have a quiz about the weather.
It's going to top things off. Well, as a quiz.
Then tending northeast to southeasterly, 15 to 20 kilometres an hour in the evening. Sunny today. 0% chance of rain in Sydney town. A maximum of 25 degrees. What about at Carring Bar? And why don't you send us over to Coventry, Raymond, and tell us what the weather is like for the kangaroos and the kiwis.
Good point, yeah. Carring Bay, a lovely day, 26 degrees. Over in Coventry, right now, Jimmy, it says it's 3 degrees.
Be nice to have a new ute for the holidays, love.
Yeah, it would. But it's going to have to wait. Christmas is expensive enough as it is.
Why wait when right now you can get a new Photon Tonland ute with no repayments for 3 months, no deposit and 3.99% interest per annum. Tonland's drive away, tons of time to pay finance offer.
Kids are going to love this new ute.
Yeah, glad we didn't have to wait.
Available to approved business applicants only. Offer ends 31st 12/16. Terms and conditions at photonmotors.com.au.
Sony Music gives you the hottest stars on the planet with Tim McGraw's new Ultimate Collection. Carrie Underwood's Australian Deluxe Tour Edition of Storyteller. Kenny Chesney's new album, Cosmic Hallelujah, featuring Pink. Leanne Rimes' Remnants and introducing Ward Thomas. All albums available now. These are the hottest stars on the planet.
Now, this next caller found love in a very unusual place. Tell us about it, Damo.
Yeah, I was actually out on a boat with the boys.
I'm intrigued.
It was the 2015 Epson Handicap. I was miles from a TV, so I watched it live on my Tab app. And winks. Wow.
You've got to love that. It's easy to love a bet this spring when you can prepare for the punt, watch racing live, and relive the action with the Tab app.
Tab. We love a bet. Replays available on all New South Wales races. Gamble responsibly.
So Hawthorn have done it. The first team in the 18-team competition to go back to back.
And Dab won this race, the Australian Grand Prix in 85. In 2016, Nico Rosberg wins the Australian Grand Prix.
Prince of Penzance from Max Dynamite. Prince of Penzance has history at Flemington. Michelle Payne. Prince of Penzance beat Max Dynamite.
On Sky Sports Radio, welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend. Brought to you by Penrith Mazda, Mulgoa Road, Penrith. Here's your hosts, Jimmy Smith and Ray Thomas.
Right, we're going to try and get this show back on track after the debacle of the quiz and, of course, the weather. We had a little bit of a off-weather pattern there as well. So, final hour, Raymond. Are you ready to finish what's been a very strong Melbourne Cup carnival for you?
I am, Jimmy, and then I'll be high-tung it to the airport. So, hopefully I'll make that plane.
Straight to the Qantas Lounge, eh?
Oh, no.
Feed up there for a while.
No, that won't be me.
No,
anyway.
Doesn't sound like you.
What's
at all,
in our final
it?
Hour, Jim?
Michael Carayannis very shortly from Ricoh Arena. Trent Lanscale dressed in who knows what. We'll get a sports update from Tanya. Jeff Lawson will be our legend of the game this morning. And we're also ready to take your calls as well on 1353. 53. But he's over there braving 3-degree temperatures. Mm. So we thought we'd better jump straight away too, as the players are back out on the field and the game has started into the 43rd minute. Michael Carayannis, the rugby league writer for the Daily and Sunday Telegraph, has been our correspondent for the last couple of weeks over there in the UK. G'day, Michael.
Hey, Jimmy. Hey, Ray. How are you going?
Yeah, really well. Thanks, mate. First of all, give us a preci of the match. 10-0 Australia. It looks to be a high-quality contest.
It's 10-0 Australia. It should be a lot more. The Australians have been on the attack practically the whole first half. They really dominated the Kiwis, and we're unlucky not to score some more points. New Zealand really haven't been in this game at all so far.
Yeah, good evening, Michael, over there. And as Jimmy said, it's pretty cool in Coventry. Only smallish crowd, though, by the looks of it on TV.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It was a double header here, so there was it cracked 20,000. So obviously England played Scotland in the first game, so I guess some people might have left. But it's a decent crowd. It's a very good ground, and but the atmosphere is very, very quiet out here, guys. I'm actually sitting outside now, and you guys can hear me clearly. So there's not much noise in the background at the moment.
It seems a little strange as to why Coventry got the start. Obviously, there's literally hundreds of stadiums in the UK because of their soccer teams that are able to carry rugby league matches. But why Coventry, Michael?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think they just wanted to take it to an area which is a rugby union heartland here. And we're playing the games at a rugby union ground, the Wasps home ground. So it's pretty... The facilities are pretty good, and the town's been sort of into it. Not as much as Hull. Obviously, Hull was very much into their rugby league, but this is a lot better crowd than the Australia and the Scotland game got in Hull last week.
Hey, Michael, a couple of significant changes in the Kangaroos team over there tonight, particularly Michael Morgan in the number 6, Cooper Cronk being rested. Do we read much into that at all, Michael?
No, not really. Mal's already said that Cooper Cronk will come back and play next week against England. It was a matter of trying to get Michael Morgan a bit of game time because he's played so many limited minutes off the interchange bench, and the Cowboys haven't played for, they didn't make the grand final. So he hasn't played a full 80 minutes for a long time. So it was just about getting some mileage in his legs just in case they do need him in the back end of the tournament.
He looks good. From what I've seen, the positive things that have been happening for Australia with the football... a lot of them's come from Michael Morgan. Has he been one of the stronger players?
Yeah, Michael Morgan and Blake Ferguson. Obviously, Blake Ferguson sort of reprieved because of Josh Mansell's unfortunate training injury. So he's been outstanding, Blake Ferguson. He's with his best performance for the Kangaroos so far. And he was probably the pick of the players in the first half. His metres out of the Kangaroos' end was amazing. And he finished well and set up a try as well. But it's been... Michael Morgan, Blake Ferguson and Greg Inglis for the Kangaroos have been the dominant players in the first half.
Still 10-0 Australia, leading New Zealand 5 minutes into the second half. Michael, what did you make of England? A sluggish start against Scotland. Jimmy was telling me they were down 8-0 early, but eventually they put Scotland to the sword. What did you make of Wayne Bennett's England?
They were horrid. Mm. They were terrible. And I think I mentioned to you guys last week that Scotland weren't that bad when they played Australia. And they improved again on that performance. But England, in that first half, they were down 8-0 after 25 minutes. It was a terrible performance. They were flat. The Burgess twins really changed the game, coming off the interchange bench and swung momentum. And Scotland just couldn't withstand the big guys coming off the bench. And that's where they lost it. But it was a really impressive performance by Scotland. And they've done themselves a lot of credit for England. I don't know. They need to play a lot better than that if they're going to compete with the Kangaroos, let alone beat them.
Yeah. That'll be them next week, of course. Error for Australia there whilst they were on the attack. The big news during the week, of course, was the injury to Josh Mansell. Shocking injury. I don't know whether you were there at the training ground and saw what happened, but implications. So Kangaroos, obviously, implications for his honeymoon as well, and implications for the Penrith Panthers about when he actually starts back for 2017. Can you clarify some of those issues, Michael?
Well, we won't see him back before June. I dare say he's probably July is probably most likely a scenario for the back end of next year, and that's a long, long way away. So that's more than half the season. So his 2017 is almost a write-off, Josh Mansell, and he's going to remain with the team for a while. There's too much swelling on that knee for him to fly out. So we're not exactly sure when he'll fly out, but he he'll be with the team for probably another couple of days at the very least. And I've just got a crowd here, guys, 21,109.
That's pretty good, yeah. Hey, Michael, before we let you go, just a quick one. My professional relationship with Jimmy Smith could be on the rocks here. We've had a tempestuous debate about the one referee. What's your opinion of it in the Four Nations Championship?
You just cut out, Ray. What was that?
Sorry? Yeah, sorry, just having the one referee in the Four Nations Championship. What's your opinion of it? Is it a good thing, bad thing? Should the NRL look at it?
Oh, I actually like the two refs. I don't think we can go back to the one ref. I think we need, and they've gone to that system now where one referee controls the whole game. I think that's the best system. When we'll flip flop in between two refs controlling one game, and you lost a bit of continuity. So we can't go back to one ref. I don't think anymore. What's the view in there?
Jimmy Smith loves you now, Michael.
Michael,
you're on for the season.
My already high opinion of you has reached new levels after that.
Bought myself another week.
We'll sign you on for the season.
Hey, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to give you an extension to next week, and if you continue
with an option for the second week.
Exactly. Option for the final. Fantastic, mate. We do appreciate that. Get back into that footy now. Still 10-0. Australia leading with the Kiwis on the attack. And thanks for the update, Michael.
The Kiwis look like they might have just scored in the corner there, guys. It looks like Solomon Tata is just barged over from dummy half, and they're taking it to the video ref to have a look.
Yeah, well, we've just come up here, and I reckon it's a try as well. So, well spotted, Michael. That's another tick. I'm just marking these things down. Karyanis correctly calls try. There you go. Good on you, Michael. We'll speak next week.
Thank you, fellas.
Thanks, Michael.
Michael, I always had a high opinion of him, right? Did you know that?
Very nice man. I told you he'd be good, Jim.
He's been fantastic for us, so we do appreciate that. And these extreme weather conditions keep coming in too. 13:53:53. Jim Richards and Scafie win at Bathurst in Godzilla, the Nissan, in atrocious conditions.
That's right.
Manly Manel actually gets us back there. What about the final round in Caddyshack? When Bill Murray had to battle with that horrific thunderstorm.
How about Bill Murray at the Cubs game? How about Bill?
Yeah, lifelong Cubs fan. Yeah. He was in there interviewing people. It was fantastic. That was John from Moorbank. Good on you, John.
And one of the great movies, Jim Caddyshack.
Look at this. It is a try to Solomon Akata. He can find the try line, that young man. Here's another one that's come in from Sophie, our friend Sophie at Strathfield, Ray.
Yeah, good morning, Sophie.
Yeah. Where is Ray Murray? Mr. Smith is lucky. There, a major rort in classic bad statesmanship, James. Very poor. I think she's referring to the quiz, although you never know with our friend Sophie.
A CD for Sophie?
Oh, you're kidding. That is ridiculous. No CD for Sophie. Let's go to an ad break.
You know when you're loading a pallet of cement into the back of your ute?
Stop!
Yeah, it's the moment just after you realise it doesn't actually fit.
Oh.
Then you feel your heart drop as you start the process of loading each bag, one by one. If only you were driving a Volkswagen Amarok with the biggest tray size in its class, you just know that it'll get the job done in one go. And with the Amarok Core 4x4 from only $39,990 drive away, you just know it's a great deal. Conditions at vwoffers.com.au.
This spring racing carnival, it's easy to help support the CUB 55. The 55 CUB workers terminated without notice and then offer their jobs back for 65% less pay. Simply join the Spring Replacing Carnival and replace any CUB made beers with anything else. And celebrate the GGs without the CUBs. It'll not only send a message of support to the workers, it'll send a blunt message to CUB management and hopefully increase their odds of offering their jobs back. Visit the Boycott CUB page on Facebook for full details of which beers to avoid.
Authorised by Alan Hicks, ETU Australia.
All covers, all grounds, all beaten. Franco won the Champion Stakes and lived up to the fight.
International racing at its very best, 7 days a week
across the Sky Racing Network.
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend is brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the number one VT50 dealer in New South Wales. Mongoa Road, Penrith.
Conversion unsuccessful, 10-4 the Australians lead, and now into the 51st minute of this test match. So, Michael Karyanis on the money there again with that one. We've got this one in just before we get to Trent Lenscow from tab.com.au. We've got this one that's come in from EJ, Ray.
Yep.
Morning, guys. Great job again.
Thought I'd help you out with the next quiz tiebreaker. Question. How many quizzes have Jimmy and Ray got right? Choices. Zero, one, or who cares? Answer, who cares?
I reckon that would be about one. It's pretty close.
Yes.
It's live radio. It's very, very,
very best. Morning, boys. How about Star Witness win in the Newmarket? Cheers from Frankie. Was that in...
I reckon it was Wanted, Jim. I reckon it was... I know what Frankie's talking about. That was the year that Wanted ran down the centre of the track. And they were almost in Indian file coming down the straight. And it was horrendous conditions. Cyclonic.
Okay. This one comes in from The Factor. Morning, boys. Extreme weather conditions. The wind on the fifth green at Kiama yesterday afternoon made putting almost impossible. Brother-in-law nearly blew a gasket. Okay, Factor, we're not sure what you're talking about there, but we do appreciate that input to the program. 1353 is the open line number. Let's get to a caller there. Doug is on the line. G'day, Doug.
G'day, Jimmy. G'day, Ray. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Doug.
I want to mention Mitch Raymond. He's going to Penrith next year.
He is.
He should be a good player for the booking role.
Well, I heard Phil Gould during the week talk about it, and it makes a lot of sense. If there's a backup to Peter Wallace, if there's an injury to Peter Wallace, then you've got cover there in Mitch Rain. If there's an injury to Nathan Cleary, then Peter Wallace becomes your cover for him, and Mitch Rain then goes into the hooking position as well. So I've always maintained, Doug, every player in the NRL is worth buying. It's just a matter of what price you get them at. And I've got the belief that Penrith have picked up Mitch Rain very cheaply, so he's a good pickup.
Yeah, it depends on the performance, how you play football, and Benji Marshall. I don't know why Brisbane bought him, but just the way the cookie crumbles, I should imagine.
Well, they paid $100,000 for Benji Marshall. They'll make that up in the first 3 months. They'll get corporate support to the level of that in the first 3 months.
Yeah, I got my nephew going to play with Newcastle on. Next year, Mitchell Andrews, he's from Forbes.
Mitchell Andrews, okay. How old's Mitchell?
He's 18, mate. He's going to play at the under-23s.
You might call him, Jim.
Under-20s, yeah. Yeah. Done a few of those Newcastle games. Mitchell Andrews. All right, Doug.
Put down your black book, Jimmy.
Mate, I'll keep an eye out for Mitchell Andrews.
Kangaroos on the attack here, Jimmy. Still 10-4, and the great man Trent Langskill has just walked into the studio as... Kangaroos trying to get it. Trent, what's the latest odds at the moment for this game? The Kangaroos still on the attack, 10-4 penalty to Australia there.
Just a live betting, Ray. Good morning to you and Jimmy. Australia are $1.15 and New Zealand $5. So if you do wish to bet live on this Four Nations clash, you can call 133-390. And just as we say that, looks as though Australia have elected to kick for the 2 points to go up 12 points to 4.
Yeah. Long time since I've said this, and usually it was in a text message. Trent, what are you wearing?
Well, it's still the suit from yesterday.
Oh, no, Trent, you've done it again.
Trent, what is going on? Do you have one suit? Or do you have a home?
Different suit. Do have a home. It has been doubted on occasions.
Right.
Unlike last week when Ray walked in and saw me typing furiously away at my desk, this time I did need the comfort of the couch that we do have in here. I heard you, Ray, walk in.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Lucky I didn't break out into song or something, Jimmy.
No, I did that yesterday in the marquee.
You did?
Yes.
Hope you weren't playing silly buggers at all, Trent, were you?
No, the dancing looked a bit silly, but the singing was right. I tell you what, I wasn't the silliest one in there. Don't worry about that. Jared Middleton made an absolute cropper himself.
That'd be good morning to Jared. You'll probably surface later this afternoon.
It'll be a PM wake-up, not an AM wake-up.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, if he gets a PM wake-up, he can still watch the whole day from Perth for this test match, Australia v South Africa. This market must have been all over the place, Trent.
It is completely turned on its head, Jimmy. So when Australia was none for 158 on Friday, going beautifully. They were $1.12. The draw was at $9, and South Africa were at $12. Even at the change of innings, when Australia had the two-run lead, Australia was $1.70, the draw $26, and South Africa $2.15. Well, after yesterday, South Africa will resume on day four at 1:30 our time at 6 for 390, so 388 ahead, and they are now $1.35, Australia $4.50, and the draw $7.50. And personally, guys, I don't usually with the odds and everything, I reckon that the $1.35 could be an absolute steal, I reckon.
Yeah, look over the line. Thurston got that penalty goal. Jimmy, 12-4 now, the Kangaroos against the Kiwis. Couple of NBL games today, Trent?
Yeah, we'll get through the rest here pretty quickly, Rate. At 1 o'clock this afternoon, the New Zealand Breakers $1.50 at home to the Brisbane Bullets. At $2.60, the line is 4.5, so that's a 1 o'clock tip-off. And then at 3 o'clock there in Wollongong, the Illawarra Hawks $1.70. Melbourne United $2.15, the line there a minuscule 1.5. Also, plenty of soccer you've been talking about this morning in the A-League. There's a couple of matches left. At 5 o'clock, Adelaide United are $1.45 at home to Central Coast. And then at 7 o'clock, Perth are even money favourites as they entertain Western Sydney. EPL, there are 5 matches. Just the notable ones here. 11 o'clock tonight, the North London Derby. Arsenal are $1.92 at home to Tottenham. You've got Liverpool $1.25 at home to Watford. That is a 1:15 start. And Manchester United, they're $1.70, even though they're away to Swansea City. That is a 2 o'clock kickoff. So it's been a fantastic week of the Spring Racing Carnival with Flemington. Obviously, all the events for Tuesday and Thursday, Les Quiddy Spirit, that was still unbelievable. Jimmy, as I walked out of the mounting yard, Ray got me straight away and he said, what was the biggest bet you had on Les Quiddy Spirit? It was just, couldn't believe what we had seen. I'll tell you that now.
What was your answer out of interest?
200 each way at $81 the win and $15.50 for the place to be exact. Wow. But on about 8:45 on the morning of, there was a punter that had $50 at 151. So
good on
him. They were having, I'm glad that they were having the party because
dream of those results. Yeah. Fantastic.
I was going to ask you, Trent, excluding your singing in the Tab Marquee, what was the highlight of the carnival for you?
Oh, Winx winning the Cox Plate, the overall carnival, Winx winning the Cox Plate. To be standing there as they walked out just with another radio commitment, so I had to sort of be in the tunnel and watch them come out, and then as I was saying to Ray when the day that it actually happened, Jimmy, it was so when Sunline won her first and when Winx won her first Cox Plate, yes, they won, but the crowd, they enjoyed it. But the fact that when they came back to Moonee Valley as defending champions and all of a sudden, well, Sunline was pretty much odds on or even money and Winx was even shorter, there's a different dynamic. And the way they both won, Sunline streeted them in her Cox Plate in 2000, Winx did the same. And the roar of the crowd, like I said, plenty of grand finals, plenty of race meetings and other sporting events, but the roar of that crowd when Winx went past, that'll be something to remember.
Yeah, I think Ray Thomas agrees with you about his highlight, certainly on the track as well. So good on you, Trent. Who knows what you'll be wearing next week, but no doubt it'll be what you wore on Saturday. So we'll look forward to that on that occasion.
Don't think I'll go a third straight week, Jimmy, but thank you very much.
Good on you, Trent. Trent Lanscale there from tab.com.au. I tell you what, you wouldn't know, would you? That's a skill in itself.
And Trent's just nodding his head, actually.
Yeah. Which isn't good for radio. Nodding your head.
1353 is the open line number. Trent Lanscale there from tab.com.au. Time now for this. Yeah.
On the Big Sports Breakfast weekend, with a sports update, here's Tanya Thomas.
And in the Rugby League Four Nations match this morning in Coventry, Australia 12 lead New Zealand 4. That's in the 59th minute. In the earlier game, England defeated Scotland 38-12. Heading into day 4 of the first cricket test at the WACA, South Africa has an overall lead over Australia of 388. Dumini, the top scorer so far in the South African second innings with 141. The Proteas resume this afternoon at 6 for 390. Meantime, day 3 of the Sheffield Shield match at the SCG, WA no wicket for 14 in its second innings, trailing New South Wales first innings by 68 runs. Sydney FC's unbeaten run in this season's A-League continues, coming back from 1-0 down at half-time to beat Melbourne Victory 2-1 last night in Sydney, their first win over the Victory in 10 meetings. And the goal from Melbourne is the first goal the Sky Blues have conceded all season, the winner coming from David Carney in the 78th minute. Meantime, Wellington recorded its first win of the season, a 2-0 win over Newcastle, both goals from Roy Krishna. Today, Adelaide take on the Mariners and the Wanderers take on Perth in Perth at 7 p.m. Australia continued its dominance over Wales in rugby, the Wallabies defeating the Welsh in the first match of their 5-game spring tour overnight, 32-8. While at Soldier Field in Chicago at the moment, boys, second half, Ireland 25. It's changed now. Ireland 30 are leading the All Blacks 8. And they'd be well into the second half too.
Oh, that's another one of these hoodoos.
Yeah.
They haven't beaten them in 111 years.
Yeah, I would say so, if ever, at all. Ever. If at all, yeah, that's right, Ray.
It's amazing.
And at Soldier Field in Chicago, wow. What are the chances?
What are the chances of them beating
him? I know. Sydney's five-game winning streak came to an end last night with the Kings going down to Cairns in the NBL match at the Snake Pit, 64 points to 57. The Kings were in front by 2 points with 3 minutes to go, but the home crowd spurred the Taipans on for the win. Despite the result, both coaches not impressed at all with their team's wayward shooting. The percentage was disgraceful. The teams meet again in Sydney tomorrow night. Meantime, despite a game high of 40 from Adelaide's Jerome Randall, Perth held on for a 106-103 win over the 36ers. Andy Murray is the new world number one on the men's tennis rankings, surpassing Novak Djokovic after he made the final of the Paris Masters when Milos Raonic pulled out of the semi-final. He'll be officially recognised late tomorrow night when the revised rankings are released. At 29, he has become the first British singles player to be world number one since computerised rankings began in 1973. This year, Murray has won Wimbledon, Olympic gold. He reached 11 finals in 12 events and won a personal record 73 matches. Djokovic was on top for 122 weeks. And by the way, the Paris final tonight, Murray will play John Isner. EPL soccer results from matches overnight. Bournemouth 1, Sunderland 2, Burnley 3, Crystal Palace 2, Man City and Middlesbrough 1 all, West Ham and Stoke 1 all, Chelsea 5, Everton 0. The V8 Supercar Championships is going down to the wire with races 24 and 25 today in Auckland. Yesterday, a great day for Red Bull Racing with wins to Shane Van Gisbergen and Jamie Wincup. But looking at the championship table, Van Gisbergen leads Wincup by 148 points. Mm. Rod Pampling on top of the leaderboard at the PGA Tour event in Las Vegas with Russell Henley and Lucas Glover. That's during the third round. They lead by one shot. Henley is in the clubhouse. He had an 8 under 63 this morning. And California Chrome is the favourite at $1.60 on TAB fixed odds for the Group 1 Breeders' Cup Classic, worth over $7 million this morning at 11:35, run at Santa Anita with Victor Espinoza on board. Boys, no doubt you saw the footage on TV of the 5 million people that attended the Cubs rally in Chicago. It was just incredible. The city's population is only 2.7 million.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Chicago? 2.7 million.
So they packed them in, people coming from all over the Midwest.
Wow.
In trains and buses and you name it. It was both commuter agencies said that it was the busiest day in history, surpassed the just from a couple of days before when Game 3, when the game was at Wrigley Field on October 28th, when 918,723 passengers rode the rail service.
Wow.
So nearly a million people on the road service. But the interesting thing is, you may have heard it on the news, I'm not sure, but it was the seventh largest gathering of humans in one place in history.
Can we get the, what was the largest gathering?
Yeah, I can tell you.
Yeah, what was it?
It was the Kumbh Mela pilgrimage in India in 2013.
How many?
30 million.
Oh,
In 2014, 17 million, the Arabian Festival in Iraq. The next one, number three, a funeral of someone, some Indian, High Commissioner, 15 million in 1969. The funeral of the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran in 1989, 10 million. The papal gathering in the Philippines in 2015, 6 million. World Youth Day in 1995 is 5 million. And then at number seven, the Chicago Cubs. So isn't that like...
What about 10? What about number nine?
I know.
Rod Stewart concert in Brazil.
That's right. So the top 10 are all... you know, official type situation. And religious gatherings. And number seven, the Chicago Cubs World Series celebration. And as you mentioned, Ray, Rod Stewart concert in Brazil in 1994, 3.5 million.
Rock and Rod.
And the Chicago Cubs.
They say, Jim, they say,
yeah,
Simon and Garfunkel had over a million at Central Park for their comeback concert in 1980, I think it was.
I've seen vision of that.
And how many times have you watched Bridged Over Troubled Water from that concert on YouTube, right?
What an amazing version by Art Garfunkel.
About 20,000.
It is. How good is the version, though? It is incredible. He doesn't miss a note at all.
I've got to say, Andy Murray becoming world number one, that is hugely significant.
It is.
That's
29 too.
Yeah. I was talking to Leo Schlink about this yesterday, guys. He was at the races for the carnival, and he thinks the Roger Federer era and the Nadal era are definitely over, and probably won't either will not win another major, which is sad to hear.
Yep.
He thinks Novak is in a spot of bother, which I find extraordinary, and he thinks Andy Murray can really cement his position as number one, and he doubts whether Novak can get back there.
Is Novak younger than Andy?
I think Novak's
29,
isn't he?
I thought he was at least 30.
I think I got a feeling Novak's younger than Andy. But anyway, we'll check that one out.
But Novak's having off court problems as well, that's what Roger said. You know, not saying that to be trite at all. That's just a fact, and that has affected his game at the moment.
Can you imagine 29 years old too, Jim?
He's 22nd of May. Mm. So he's the 22nd of May 1987 as a birth date. And Andy's the 15th of May. I told you he was younger then. Much younger.
1 week.
A week. And can you imagine all the clauses that are activated within his contracts, Andy Murray, for becoming the world number one?
Amazing.
And that gathering of people. Just incredible.
5 million people.
Oh, I love Rod Stewart, but my respect has gone to a new level. By the way, here come the All Blacks. 30 points to 15 now. 30 points to 15.
So why are they playing over there? That's the story.
I think the All Blacks have taken a game there every year. I know the Wallabies played there last year in the lead-up to the Rugby World Cup, and the All Blacks had played there the year before. Sonny Bill Williams played there. It's an official test match, and I think it's what's most commonly described as a revenue-raising exercise, Raymond.
The All Blacks might have been out partying with the Chicago Cubs with the sounds of things.
Could have been. Out with the 5 million.
Yeah.
1353-53 is the open line number. We'll take a break. We'll come back with our legend of the game. It's that man, Jeff Henry Lawson.
Texts and emails on the Big Sports Breakfast are brought to you by the Wideline Windows and Doors 24/7 online quoting app. Take a closer look at wideline.com.au.
Hunter's Postmortem brings you the best racing analysis.
Join Ron Duffersey,
Dean Lester
and Glenn Munsey as they cover all the feature racing and take your calls. Hunter's Postmortem, Monday mornings at 9, here on your racing leader, Sky Sports Radio.
This is Roy Orbison, the ultimate collection. Pretty woman. The definitive career-spanning collection from this true rock and roll legend. Featuring classic hits from his early years and right through his incredible career, including memorable songs with the Traveling Wilburys. Roy Orbison, the ultimate collection. Get it now.
On the line is Stuart, who found love earlier than expected.
That's right. Yeah, it was just after the third leg of the quaddy.
Go on.
Well, I was 3 from 3 and even had a roughie in there, but the last leg had me nervous, the quaddy killer. So I went for Tab's quaddy cash out and still came out in front.
That'll settle the nerves. If you love an early collect, cash out of your quaddy this spring carnival with Tab's quaddy cash out.
Tab, we love a bet. Terms and conditions at tab.com.au. Gamble responsibly.
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend is brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the number one BT50 dealer in New South Wales. Mongoa Road, Penrith.
Welcome back to the program. Jimmy and Ray all the way up to 9 o'clock. I bumped into this bloke the other day, Raymond, and I thought this guy would be perfect as our legend of the game. 46 Absolutely. Test matches. For Australia, 79 one-day internationals, 180 wickets, an aggressive captain for New South Wales when he filled that role, and a long and extensive and impressive coaching resume as well. He's currently assistant coach with the New South Wales Blues, so in the heart of a very tough Shield game, and we've got Jeff Henry Lawson online. G'day, Jeff.
Good morning, James.
Thanks very much for joining us, and we know you joined the Big Sports Breakfast during the course of the year to chat cricket, but we thought we'd have a chance to look back at your career, which I'm sure you're looking forward to. I want to take you back to, well, it was your third test, and it was England at Lord's in the 1981 Ashes series, and you picked up a nice little 7 for Jeff, and after, you know, times when your body had let you down and you worked hard to get in there, was that, a pinnacle of your time wearing the baggy green?
Well, it's my third test, so fortunately I got a few more after that.
Yeah.
And was fast on winning Ashes series, so, I mean, playing at Lord's, it's the hallowed ground You know, it's the temple of cricket, and to think that you know, a kid from Wagga Wagga could be there playing and get a few wickets. Oh, it took a long time to get those 7 weeks. I think I bowled 42 overs or something. it was a rainy or stop start game that ended up a draw, so the wickets didn't contribute to a win. So probably less memorable, but get 7 for 80 in a test match, you take that and they stick your name on the honour board.
Yes.
So exactly, yeah. People forever who wander through the dressing rooms get to see that. So, I mean, I reckon that was the start, and it sort of said to me, well, yeah, you're good enough to be here. You know, could continue on. So it was more a teaser than a result in itself.
Yeah. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Can I take you back to your childhood days? You mentioned Wagga earlier. It's such a fertile breeding ground for champion sportsmen. Was cricket always Jeff Lawson's calling as a kid?
Well, growing up at Wagga, every sport was your calling. You know, I mean, it really was that kind of town. You have great opportunity to play, great facilities. Whether you wanted to play rugby league, Australian rules, soccer, hockey, big hockey town. Michael Slater played representative hockey out of there. You know, we'd go off to junior golf at 6 a.m. and then go off and play cricket after that, play cricket all day. Yeah. You know, we played a lot of tennis as well. You know, whatever was going, really. You know, we had a pretty big swimming club in Wagga.
So how did cricket become your sport, Jeff? Was it someone who tapped on the shoulder one day and said, young man, come and concentrate on cricket?
Well, not so much. I think we gave, you know, kids of that era, and I'd throw in the Mortimer brothers in particular and a few others, Steve Martin, Ian Forrest, a lot of guys who played rep rugby league. You know, they were good cricketers as well. It was really only when I came to Sydney. I mean, I played a bit of rugby for Beanie in New South Wales when I first came up. But I was just a bit better at cricket. I got into first grade cricket in Sydney the first year I was in the Big Smoke and did pretty well. Actually, the uni won a premiership in my first year. And if you're in winning sides, you get noticed. I don't think I played that big a role in the winning side. But, you know, if you're in winning sides and you're playing at that level, you know, you get noticed. And I got picked in New South Wales Colts. I mean, I just loved playing. You know, it wasn't a vocation in those days. You just played because it was a fun thing to do. You didn't see it as a career. My career was going to be optometry. It wasn't going to be cricket. So you just enjoyed it and played it, and I was a little bit better at cricket than a few other sports.
Can I ask you about your action, Jeff? It was a very distinct action. You know, the front shoulder or front arm pointing sort of over to mid-wicket and then the big toe drag. Was that something that you that's the way you always bowled? I've spoken to Stuart Clark about this. You sort of, your feet go where your feet go. Was that the case for you?
Oh, more or less, yeah. I thought I was Dennis Lilly, Smithy. You know, that's what I saw on TV. I thought, when I was in the playground at Wagga Public, or Mount Austin High, I used to run in and think, oh, that's how Dennis Lilly bowls. And of course, there's nothing like it. But yeah, it was where, yeah, I mean, often that first ball or first go you have at cricket, that's the action you more or less can get stuck with the rest of your life, because it's hard to change those sort of things.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was just how it happened. No deliberate plan there.
It worked for you, Jeff. Jeff, when you came into the Australian team, you mentioned Dennis Lilly. He was coming towards the end of his career. It was the end of a golden era of Australian cricket. Greg Chappell retired, Rod Marsh, etc. Then Australia went through a fairly tough time, and it was yourself and Alan Border who basically led from the front for about 3 or 4 years there.
Yeah, it was post-World Series cricket when I first got a game, and then Lilly Chappell Marsh, the great triumvirate, played on till 83-4 at Sydney Test against Pakistan was their last game. And I get a little bit weary of people saying, you know, the dearth of good cricket by Australia through the 80s. We won the Ashes in 82-83. We beat a good Pakistan 83-84. We're up against that West Indies side that beat everybody. And the Australian Cricket Board used to bring them out every summer to try and get the freshie. You know, most of the time they did, but they were the greatest sides of all time. And then we won the 87 World Cup. You know, we lost the Ashes in the middle of that, 85, when we had 16 of our best players on the Rebel Tour of South Africa.
Yeah.
So we, you know, it wasn't that bad a period, guys. Yeah. It was, you know, New Zealand had, you know, Richard Hadley bowling well, and they beat us, and they played some really good cricket. So I don't really look at that period as, you know, as that much of a downside. I mean, you know, we got the Ashes back in 89, and that was a pretty much of a a great accomplishment. So, yeah, a couple of years where the Windies of New Zealand, who had great sides, beat us, and we lost a lot of players to the Rebel Tour. Mm. And let's face it, Australian cricket's got six teams. You don't get too many first-class players to choose from if you lose you know, some of your top 16. So, you know, I mean, an AB, you know, led from the front through that period and did it tough, but he showed what Australian cricket can be made of.
Your career had a long list of injuries. I think you got a back injury towards the back end of that 81 Ashes tour. I was talking about the 86 Tide test a little bit earlier. We were talking on Friday about it, and I said, oh, where were you? Did you play? No, I was flat on my back in the living room, could hardly move. How much impact did that have on you, and how difficult was it to make those long and arduous comebacks from back injuries?
Yeah, well, the 81 one was I snapped a ligament in that famous test at Headingley, where I don't like to talk about it in the cold weather.
Fair enough.
I did not bowl on the last day, please. Anyway, so yeah, I mean that was a couple of months getting better, and we didn't really have full time physios in that time. You had to go and sort out your own medical stuff when you got home. It's nothing like it is today. And then 86, 87, I got worn down. I'd bowled so many overs during that period you were talking about, because I was the go-to man for Alan Border. I just bowled and bowled and bowled, and I wasn't getting appropriate treatment and all rest. I mean, the rotation stuff they have these days, I would have been rested, you know, well before I got injured. And then an orthopedic surgeon managed to rip the covering off my spine with a very inappropriate action, which is why I was out of the game for 10 months. But, you know, finally got back. I mean, I ended up playing, you know, a couple of hundred first-class games. So I played a lot of cricket, even with a couple of injuries. So, you know, if you're going to bowl fast, you're going to get injured. And that's still happening to everybody today. So you just got to wear that.
Yeah.
The 89 Ashes Tour, Jeff, I was at uni then. I was up all night watching the cricket. It was a great way to study and watch. And it was... Did the team just get on a roll, did they? Because they went over there and... The English press said it was the worst Australian... They'd say it every time an Australian team goes over, the worst team to tour, but something happened on that tour. It just clicked, didn't it?
Well, the first thing is the English press said it was the worst team to tour England.
Mm.
So that's a fair motivation. I mean, they didn't have a lot of objective press there with so many tabloids writing a headline. Mm. So that spurred us on, and a couple of things David Gower said about us spurred us on. And AB... you know, he was a reluctant captain through the mid-80s, but when he really wanted to do the job and he involved himself in all aspects of the game, he really did that in 89. And we had Terry Orlemer back. He'd been on that Rebel Tour.
Yeah.
We had Merv Hughes in pretty good form. And, you know, I watched Peter Siddle bowl yesterday, and it just reminds you of Merv. I mean, Merv probably a few yards quicker than Peter at the moment, but just continually run in and put pressure on batsmen. And Merv was perhaps a little more verbal as well than Pete, but similar sort of bowlers. And Terry, sort of his stuff tailor-made for English conditions, and me sort of supporting those couple of guys. And, of course, you know, Steve Waugh making 100 every time he walked out.
Yeah.
That sort of helped as well. So Steve Waugh made that transition in 89 from the guy who was just hanging in the test side with his bowling to being, you know, one of our greatest ever players.
Mm.
AB was tough, and myself and Terry Orlemer and AB said, well, this is going to be our last Ashes tour. AB ended up doing another one. We thought, we had three Ashes tours, AB and I. This is our last chance. You know, we lost in 81, we lost in 85, we're not going to do it again. And, you know, and then things did come here. We caught really well. Our catching was outstanding. Boone and Jones, Mark Taylor, you know, got
890-odd
runs. With Jeff Marsh. So, yeah, look, it all really did come together quite well in that series.
29 wickets at 27 is more than a support member of that bowling attack in that 1989 Ashes series. I want to talk about the WACA ground. We're seeing a test match there. Every time there's a test match at the Wacker, does your jaw start to itch, Jeff?
Oh, not particularly. And I've been there back several times, you know, coaching guys. I was at a function for PNG cricket in Port Moresby a couple of months ago.
Of course.
And they had a big dinner, a presentation dinner. They did these introductions. Chris Martin from New Zealand was there, and Lisa Stelaka and myself, and Jeff Marsh. And they did these video introductions. And my video introduction was being hit in the jaw by Curly Ambrose. And the guy who put the video together, who happens to also be the PNG national captain, he put it on loop. I mean, they showed it about five times. And look, I'll be honest, I felt quite nauseous watching it.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. I did not really want to see that. Watching it again doesn't do a lot for me, but playing at the whack. I mean, I should have had the full grill on my helmet.
Yeah.
It's my fault, really. I mean, that's just stupidity. And, you know, in the wake of the recent coroner's inquest, you know, it's now compulsory for people to wear full helmets, so that's a good thing. Mm. I was just too silly not to. I borrowed Craig McDermott's helmet. I'd been out of. I was coming back from my back injury, and that was my first test back. And I used to wear a helmet with the full grill on it, and that game, Craig McDermott, 12th man, I'll just borrow your lid. And I knew, I'd been sconed about twice in 30 years. But Curly Ambrose was a bit quick for me.
Hey, Jeff, the best batsman you bowled to and the best cricketer you played with or against?
Well, the best batsman, that's a pretty long list, mate. There's a lot of guys got a lot of runs off me. So, it was like Javed, me and Dad in Pakistan in particular, but he was good all over the world. He was just a fabulous player off fast bowling and off spin bowling. I mean, Viv Richards, just dynamic and destructive. You know, there were days where there was no safe place. You couldn't find a set of field to bowl at an area where he's not going to score off you. You know, David Gower on his day, you know. Just the graceful executioner. Most of that West Indies lineup, Greenidge and Haynes at the top, followed by Richards and Clive Lloyd and Hugh Richardson. They're all pretty good. I mean, Greg Chappell, when you played against him, you know, New South Wales versus Queensland, and got even AB when he defected north. There's some
hard
outstanding. Martin Crowe. Yeah, there's a long list.
Yeah,
I mentioned
great players even.
Isn't there? Yeah, I mentioned during the intro your captaincy, and you know, from what I understand, it had an impact on future Australian captains in Mark Taylor and Steve Waugh.
Well, they found out what not to do.
No, I wasn't going to say that, Jeff. Why was it that your style was so? I think you famously declared it naught for naught at one stage at the SCG and got the points there too, didn't you?
No, we didn't get the points, but we should have. Look, when I got the captaincy, when I spent my life at fine leg, cricket life at fine leg, but I used to play captain at fine leg. I was always analysing the game and what should be happening, what's happening in this ball, where the field, what this batsman do. So I was always an analyser of the game, and particularly when you play at the SCG, when you got spin on so much.
Yep.
And as having spinning wickets and great spinners, it's wonderful cricket. And so even though I was the fast bowler, of course, but to watch how guys went about, you know, working batsmen out, setting fields, you know, their tactical stuff, and with Greg Matthews, obviously his verbal stuff as well, but how they would analyse batsmen and work them out. I mean, it's just a fascinating part of the game. And I was always doing that, you know, in my own mind, deep backward square leg or mid-on or somewhere. So when I got given the captaincy, I'd say, oh, okay, righto, we'll just give this a shot. And some basic philosophy, let's play to our potential, let's play with freedom. Who cares if we get out or get beaten? We've just got to play to our potential, you know, and release that, you know, that uncertainty that comes to people when they fear failure. I think that's one of the biggest things in any sport.
It's a very good point, yeah.
You've got to play your game properly. And the talent we had, you know, with the Waugh brothers, Michael Bevan, Mark Dale, Steve Small, Michael Slater, you know, just enormous talent. And I was just a joy to the captain, because you've got so many weapons at your disposal to play good cricket.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, Jeff, the fear of failure, is there any way the Australians can get out of this hole in the whacker?
Sorry, is there any way...
Australia can get out of this hole they're in at the whacker?
It's unlikely. They need to take four wickets in a hurry. Watching the pitch seemed to be just starting to do a bit last night, you know, which is going to do on day four and five. And Peter Siddle had the ball going both ways off the pitch. And you want to chase 450, you need a pretty flat wicket. I mean, obviously, South Africa chased like 418 or something last time there. I don't think this is a good enough pitch, but never say never, and that's the attitude Australia have to have. But you're chasing 400 plus in test matches. History tells you that is a rare achievement.
Yeah, going to be very tough. Hey, it's been very enjoyable having a chat to you, Jeff. Great looking back on what was an outstanding career. Good luck today at the SCG. They've got a fight on their hands, the Blues. They need their assistant coach to step up today, so good luck with that.
Yeah, no, we need our spinners to step up, mate. It's great. It's a dry wicket, spinning a bit. There's been some really good cricket here for 2 days because we've had a spinning wicket, and we need more wickets than that, pitches like that in Australia. That's how we'll win in India, playing on some spinning deck. So it's great to be back at the SCG, and we deserve a good crowd this afternoon. It'd be nice.
Yeah, well, we urge all our listeners to get out there if you've got some spare time this afternoon and some good quality cricket out at the SCG. Good on you, Jeff. Great chatting. We'll do it again shortly.
Cheers, young one.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Lawson there, our legend of the game. Just an update. It is full-time over there at Coventry. I tell you what, Sean Johnson held up over the line.
With 3 seconds to go, Jim.
Yeah, and it very nearly got a try at the end of that as well, too. We've got to take a break, Raymond, and then we're back with Scotty Foster and wrap up the program. An update over there at Soldiers Field, 33 Ireland, 29.
Oh, here they come.
The All Blacks.
Sky Sports Radio takes you to one of the most unique two-day race meetings in country New South Wales this Friday and Saturday. Gundagai, Snake Gully Cup Carnival. Hear the previews, late mail and the action here on Sky Sports Radio.
Are you stuck in traffic now? Think of the relaxing time later when you're enjoying a glass of Sacred Hill wine. Try Sacred Hill Chardonnay, always affordable, by De Bortoli. Here's the traffic.
We're seeing slow traffic through Ramsgate, San Susie and Tarrant Point towards the Royal National Park this morning. That's due to the Sydney-Toogong bike ride, which is underway. And Tarrant Point, an extra southbound lane has been closed on Tarrant Point Road at Rocky Point Road after a cyclist was injured earlier. At Sydney Airport, traffic is crawling into the international terminal on Mar Street and Airport Drive. In Mossman, it's bumper to bumper over the Spit Bridge towards the Northern Beaches. But the Pacific Highway is moving well through Lintfield to Warunga at this stage, and the Cumberland Highway is clear down to the M4. Tomorrow is 7-11 day, so they're giving you a free medium Slurpee or regular coffee with any purchase to celebrate. It's one day only. Make a good call. Excludes tobacco products. I'm Tim Govers on Sky Sports Radio.
Lose the beer gut without losing all the beers. G'day, Adam McDougall here.
The man shave helped my dad lose weight and feel better. Now dad takes me to the park and we play footy.
Shake off those extra kilos today at themanshake.com.au.
Consult your GP before beginning any diet.
Window shopping takes on a whole new meaning at Wideline.
Take a closer look at Wideline's showstopper of a showroom at Ricebury.
That's where you'll find an extensive range of residential, architectural and commercial aluminium windows and doors.
And you can't look past their timber windows and doors either.
Customer parking and a dedicated kids room make for hassle-free window shopping at Wideline.
Now open at 593 Botany Road, Ricebury.
Only 700 metres from Green Square Station.
Wideline. According to the Australian Share of Audio study, we're listening to around 3.5 hours of audio a day, and it's not just radio. For example, Mr. Spotify, what's your share of listening?
Less than 6%.
Less than 6%? Really?
Mm.
Oh, okay, how about you, Miss Pandora?
Less than 2%.
Mm. Mr. Apple Music?
Also less than 2%.
Right. Because when it comes to radio, its share of listening is...
Nearly 65%.
Which is over 2 hours a day.
Because radio is...
Radio is live.
Radio is local.
The presenters are entertaining, we know.
Exactly, which is why when advertisers want to reach this huge audience of audio lovers, they should turn to...
Radio.
Because nothing else comes close. Go to radioitsalovething.com.
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend is brought to you by Penrith Mazda, the number one VT50 dealer in New South Wales. Mongoa Road, Penrith.
Speculation is that he's returned much better condition than he went down, Scott Foster from Flemington. I don't know whether if that's the case. Good morning, Scotty.
Good morning, Jimmy, and I wouldn't say I returned better than when I went, but I definitely returned a little bit worse for wear, that's for sure.
Well, at least you returned, Scotty. We've only got a couple of minutes. We better get into this one. You've gone up market with the 2007 Audi.
Yeah, certainly have. This is an absolutely stunning vehicle. This is the 2007 Audi Q7 luxury all-wheel drive wagon, grey in colour. This is one car that will turn heads. It has sports suspension, dual sports exhaust, window tint, satellite navigation, reverse camera, front and rear park sensors. It's got the dual climate control air conditioning, power windows, cruise control, traction control, ABS brakes with brake assist, electric leather seats, Bluetooth and remote central locking. It's got everything. It's got all the extras, and you will be the talk around town. It looks that good. It's powered by a very reliable 3-litre turbo diesel engine. It comes with logbooks and full service history, so you know you are buying quality, but most importantly, you are buying a car that looks like $100,000, and today it's priced unbelievably at just $26,990 drive away for our listeners. It's ridiculous value, so go to the website www.fostersqualitycars.com.au because this is cheap, and we must have gone Melbourne Cup Carnival mad to be selling this car for this price. So maybe it's time you took an upgrade there, Jimmy.
He's in the market. Don't worry, Scotty. Hey, Scotty, if our listeners need finance, you can help them out too.
We certainly can. We can arrange finance for this car or any of our cars with great packages available at the moment. We are also helping a lot of people that couldn't previously get finance get into a car. If you've had credit issues in the past, then now is the time to call. If you're on a pension, have paid or unpaid defaults, you're new to Australia or on a student visa, we can help. If you're on sickness benefits or starting a new business and need